Welcome to a special edition of the 155 Election Podcast, the Ward 8 Hamilton City Council by-election. Episode 169. Andrew Federko, you are running for Ward 8 City Councilor. Welcome to the 155 Podcast.
Thank you very much, Joey. It's a pleasure to be here, and thank you for having me.
So firstly, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, my name is Andrew Federko. I am currently a full-time professor and program coordinator at Mohawk College here in Ward 8 in the beautiful city of Hamilton. I've been here for about 6 years now. Actually, funny story, when I first started working here, I was coming off a job in Cornwall, Ontario, and I would drive 5 hours both ways, so 10 hours in total, just to teach one class once per week at the lovely Mohawk College campus here on Fennel in Ward 8. And I'm now much closer. So my drive is now, you know, less than 10 minutes. I've lived in Ward 8, just at Garth and Fennel. I now just live on the border. I've moved since we've settled down. I've purchased a home here in Hamilton, so I'm now a full-time resident. You know, I walk the streets of Ward 8. I work in Ward 8, and I really spend a lot of money at the local businesses. So I'm, you know, very much in touch with a lot of the small business owners, the grocery store owners, things like that. But a little bit about me personally, my background in education is in business. I have a doctorate of business administration, which we were chatting about just before this, a master's of business administration, and I'm currently just completing a master's of healthcare administration. I'm also a new product development professional. It's a global certification for developing new products. So my specialty when it comes to business is program creation and product development. Other than that, my personal background in business is in sports and obviously academia. I've worn many hats in hockey and in sports in general. I've been a general manager and head coach of a junior hockey team out in BC, which was a great experience building an expansion hockey team, both on the business and on the ice side. I've been an executive director of the Ottawa Power Wheelchair Hockey League, so accessibility is a major concern for me, and you'll see that reflected in my experience. I've also spearheaded numerous female gaming programs empowering women in different industries. Other than that, though, you know, I like to play chess. I enjoy a cold beer or a hot coffee, depending on the time of the day. And you can usually find me, you know, around some of the local establishments hanging out, watching the Jays on the patio.
Why are you running for Ward 8 councillor, and why should we vote for you?
Well, our by-election vote is on September 22nd, and I need to be ready to go for October 8th, as do all the other candidates. And I think in this situation, we really need someone who understands what's going on in the ward and is capable of producing results. So both experience in my professional side, my personal interests lying within the ward, and I understand that we have an urgent need for readiness when this councillor takes position. So with my track record of fiscal responsibility within the ward, service improvements to things like accessibility and programming, and I think most importantly, partnership building, I have the grounded experience to take this role and run with it and make sure that the residents are heard. And not just heard, but their voices are actually turned into tangible action. So what I'll say to you is this, one of my specialties is data. And we often say, you know, what is data? Data is a recording of something that happened. My specialty is looking at data that exists on any topic, market research, analyzing all of it sufficiently so that I can come up with any opinion, any pattern, identify what exactly is going on. And then ultimately, the most important is transitioning that data from information into what we call intelligence, and that's making decisions. So when I make decisions, they're grounded on data. They're grounded on real things that have occurred. Emotions and opinion are fantastic, and knowledge and experience is always part of the equation, but I like to work with what is actually going on. In the case of Ward 8, we do have some serious issues. From the safety on Upper James being a major concern, and that's a major concern for institutions that anchor our ward like Mohawk College, and of course, our thriving commercial district on Upper James, and then down to concession, we have various safety concerns that we really need to focus on. My first day as councillor will be voting actually on a major change to Upper James. When I say my first day, I'm talking hypothetically here, but that's not the moment for someone to start learning the job. And more importantly, not the job itself, but the skills required to do the job. So I'll give you an example. In my first year at Mohawk College, I listened. I didn't act without listening. I looked at what was happening, listened and asked people what they thought should be done. And then ultimately, after a year, I felt comfortable enough to start making change. We don't have the luxury of 1 year here. We have the luxury of until October 8th. And what I can promise is from the moment that I entered to the moment that we reach that election poll and to the moment that councillor takes position, I will be the most diligent in researching our actual needs, both in the data that's available. And if not available, I will seek out people and do the primary research to make sure their voices are documented.
Do you live in Ward 8, yes or no?
No.
What are your thoughts on residency and representation?
Residency and representation are important in the sense that someone has to be aware of those they are representing. I do not think that residency is the only way you can learn about how to represent a community or a group. So in the case of Ward 8, while I do live on technically the boundary presently, I work here, I shop here, I drive here, I spend the majority of my time here. That's from the moment I wake up in the morning until, you know, I cross the boundary and drive home late at night. So I believe more than residency in being present and accessible. If you want to ask me a question about Ward 8, from where the best place to grab a shawarma is to where the best place to have a meeting where maybe you want to have a cold beer, but you don't want the, you know, the environment to be too loud. I know the business owners. I know the menus, and I will continue to be here. So while not a direct resident, I am a very passionate, present, and accessible member of the Ward 8 community.
What are two of your citywide priorities for Hamilton?
I believe right now, Hamilton has an issue with accountability. I could focus on any one project specifically. There's a handful that come to mind. You've mentioned some in the prep documents that you sent me, the reading materials, but I wanted to mention others as well. We have the upcoming vote to Upper James and the changes on the 8th of October. But there's also in the news talks about some issues with projects to do with, say, the Red Hill Parkway, the asphalt being slippery, the cost of that investment, and who will take accountability for it, whether or not that will affect taxpayers within the city. And there are other projects as well. With Mohawk College, I've had the pleasure of seeing a lot of the blueprints for plans 5 years down the road. And those plans extend from the city of Hamilton throughout Ward 8, also into neighboring and adjacent communities like the city of Brantford or the city of Burlington. So for example, when I work with the YMCA, it is the YMCA of Hamilton, Burlington, and Brantford. So for me, I think we really have to take accountability locally. And when I say locally, I mean within the ward, but within the city as a whole, and see where the issues overlap. If there is a need in another ward, I want to know how that affects my ward directly. Is it coming out of our budget? If I agree to an immediate concern, you know, a temporary need to solve a problem, what does that mean in the long term? And we call this systems thinking often. You make a decision, you have to understand how it affects everything else in the big picture. So for me, accountability is a big thing. When we say we are going to own something, if we've made a mistake with a project or we've missed an opportunity, such as putting a hockey team into Lime Ridge Mall, you know, and now we're seeing the flourishing of a team in Ottawa under the same ownership group. There are a number of things that I'm attuned to through my positions in the ward, but also that I'm attuned to just because I'm very passionate and interested in my community. Another issue that I'd really focus on is safety in general. And I know that's sort of a buzzword right now with everything that's happened, but I look at safety and accessibility as a business concern, first and foremost. The way I teach it in programming and in product and in sales is that if someone doesn't feel comfortable anywhere in your business, in your program, in your community, they're not going to spend time there. They're not going to spend money there. So we have to make sure that people feel comfortable, they feel safe where they are. And we also have to make sure that those safe spaces are accessible. So a big part of what I want to focus on is making sure our students, our seniors, our consumers feel safe navigating transit, navigating the sidewalks, navigating the infrastructure to arrive at the small businesses that really are the pillars of our community and the large institutions that anchor employment.
What are two of your priorities for Ward 8?
In Ward 8, I look at the Upper James corridor and I think of public perception. Public perception is something that is tied into safety. But, you know, my family and my colleagues and my friends exist all over Canada. I've had the pleasure of working in all Canadian provinces and Northern Territories on more than one occasion. And in doing so, I learned the tendencies and the nature of how to communicate with people from different areas. I also have an understanding of what people don't know about other areas in Canada. So when I get text messages on my phone regularly and people have an external image of Hamilton as being an unsafe place, I'm the first to counter and say, listen, the news is painting a very specific picture in a lot of cases, and they're highlighting a lot of the negative incidents, which, you know, unfortunately can happen in media. At the same time, I'd really like to highlight some of the positivity. And when I teach decision making and I teach social media, we have to understand that for every one positive thing that you do, 10 negative things may be brought to light first. It takes 10 positive interactions to outweigh one negative interaction. So with all of that in mind, what I would like to see is I'd like to see us really anchor and produce a sense of, hey, there's a lot of good stuff going on here. There's youth programming. There's accessible programs for seniors. We have great food. There are great restaurants you can check out. Hamilton is an absolutely amazing food city. In fact, my favorite in Canada. However, this is not the perception that people necessarily get when they look up Hamilton on their media, on Facebook, on TikTok, wherever it is that they engage. I'd like to see that we work with small businesses, we work with large institutions, we work with the media, we work with the government to make sure we are painting an accurate image of ourselves and in a positive way. And if there are negative things that we do have to face, that we'll discuss them in the proper context and the proper frame of mind. Not just this is a problem, but what is the solution? And if no one has the solution, I'm happy to bring one to the table. A second priority for Ward 8, I'd really like to dive into this when I have more opportunity to see the actual data, but I want to know about our city reserves. What stresses do we have? How efficiently are we working? If we do have any costs, what is the cost recovery timeline? For me, financial and fiscal responsibility is a big part of what I teach and what I practice. I would really like to dive in and see where our money is going, not just where it's being allotted, but exactly how it's being spent down to the last detail. And again, if we are making decisions to allot money to something, I actually want to go back and look at the data that led to that decision being made. I'm not questioning anything other than, are we on the right path from the data we have to the decision we are making? If we don't have the right data, we're never going to make the right decision. So for me, I'm not going to take it for granted that the decisions we've made already are correct without diving into the actual data. So for me, I'd really, really like to see the numbers. I'd like to dive into the research, and I'd really like to make sure that the plan that we have is accountable.
The city of Hamilton is facing a fiscal crisis. According to the city's own financial projections, the city's discretionary reserve is forecast to be down to just $1 in 2027. The city's last fiscal update was in November 2023, so none of us know the current state of city finances. In November 2026, when the new council term begins, decisions will need to be made. What are your thoughts on this coming fiscal cliff, and how do you plan to approach budgeting?
Our budget is our operating manual for the year, and there's always going to be trade-offs. I think we have to be more than anything transparent in our budgeting process. Residents need to see, and I need to see to make the right decisions, exactly how each dollar is allocated, and I just finished stating that as well. I want to know that the results that we're seeing can be achieved based on the decisions we are making. Reserves are like an emergency fund, though, as well. We should be protecting them. We shouldn't be using them to patch short-term holes when there is a longer-term play that needs to be addressed. So for me, you know, as you said, we don't have the numbers yet. And I mentioned that previously. When I get them, I would love to do a deep dive in them, but I'm not going to be waiting. I am going to be doing primary research along the way using my 16 years of market research experience to dive in and maybe see if there are some suggestions as to what is going on without it being clearly stated. Reading between the lines. At the same time, I'm an innovator. There is a difference between creativity and innovation. Being creative means thinking of a new way to do something. Innovating means feasibly being able to actually do it. So you might have a great idea, but not be able to pull it off in practice. I would really like to know that we have explored all new and fair revenue sources, reducing pressure on things like property taxes. Even down to property taxes, the city of Hamilton probably has the most difficult system for paying your property taxes anywhere that I've lived, and I've lived in every province and territory. It should be simpler. So when we look at how our money is spent, I want to see if it's delivering real value to residents. And if it's delivering real value to residents, we have to have a way to measure it. We call those KPIs, key performance indicators. I would love to dive into what our KPIs are. What are our objectives? And see if the spending that we are either planning to do or have already done is going to align with those needs.
As Ward 8 Councillor, you will have around $2 million per year in discretionary funds to allocate. How do you plan to manage these funds?
Fiscal responsibility is a big part of what I've done all over my careers, from being a general manager of a hockey team. I ran the business side. That means creating the team with the business plan to executing it on the ice. People often ask me, Andrew, what was the first thing you did when you took over as general manager? I secured a liquor license for our arena. Why? Because that was our biggest revenue stream in hockey. The next thing I did was I went out to the community and I had our players volunteer at the seniors' homes, clearing leaves, clearing snow, building a good community rapport and reputation. And a combination of different strategies is what we really need. Let's talk about housability as an example, right? It's not just a statistic. It's not just a KPI that I want to dive into. We call this irrational versus rational decisions or theory. The rational is the logical, the math, what's behind it. But the irrational is what's actually happening. I want to know what's actually happening to people. Are people deciding whether they can stay or not in Hamilton based on the decisions we have made? And if they are leaving, we have to revisit those decisions. So We need to increase housing supply to attract people. It has to be affordable along transit corridors, and the transit itself ties in. And while these are all very high level talking points, I think having that systems view, that view of every need as one, is the only way we can really manage that budget fiscally. You know, when it comes down to it, we need partnerships as well. And a big thing that I deliver is partnerships at the highest strategic and executive levels with community organizations, with government organizations, and with major companies like Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment or the YMCA, both locally and nationally. I want to make sure that I use my contacts, my networks, to really understand what it is we can do to maximize our budgets.
You're promising to improve City Hall. I'm feeling exhausted on this topic because I heard every candidate in the 2022 change election promise they were going to make City Hall transparent. If elected, you'll have 1 year inside City Hall before the new council term begins in November 2026. How will you use this year to prepare an action plan on transparency for the next council term?
It's a great question. I have direct experience in doing this with partners at the highest level of governance and operation in Canada and in Ontario specifically. I had the pleasure of entering my students in a Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment sponsored case competition, a business case competition. And a big part of it was culture, accessibility, equity, diversity, inclusivity. And all of that tied into the project they were launching to address these needs. Those projects were all displayed transparently on their foundation's website. That's something that our students used for information. And you mentioned the open data available from the City of Hamilton, Open Hamilton. In our IB 103 market research class that our graduate students learn at Mohawk College, we use the Open Hamilton archive to actually research city needs and problems. Our capstone project in that course for the last 6+ years has been finding a problem with the City of Hamilton through by analyzing the data and proposing a solution, in this case, a program, to address it. So for me, what would I do to begin? Well, I would begin by seeing where we are exactly with our success and transparency, and then taking it back to what is failing us. Whether that means putting together a team, an action team, a force, a task force, however you want to term it, of people that are capable, not just myself, but people that are capable of bringing this change to the city, I can do that. I have the networks, I have the contacts, and I have the direct experience. And when we speak about transparency, anything that I do to achieve it will be transparent as well. We'll be openly talking about it. I would love to further initiatives like Open Hamilton. I'd love to see more data. When you dive into the City of Hamilton Ward 8 profile on the website, you'll see a lot of Open Hamilton data on different demographics, different statistics about the ward, from the residents to the businesses to, you know, what have you. These are the things we really need to focus on. Are they current? Are they relevant? And forgive me, I'm going to use a word here that might sound like I'm swearing. I'm not. The CRAAP, the crap test. We have to make sure that the data we're using is current. It's relevant. It has the proper authority. We have to make sure that it's not biased in any way. What is the source of that data? What is the purpose of that data? And who is providing it to you? So if we don't have the right people to do it, we'll never achieve it. So I want to look at both what we're telling people and who is providing that data to them.
October 8th, you'll be sworn into office and take your seat in the council horseshoe. On that day, council will vote on zoning reforms, including upzoning Upper James between the Link and Rymal, and residential zoning reform to prevent medium-density missing middle housing along minor and major arterial roadways. The housing crisis will be a literal day one issue for you. How will you approach planning approvals, and how will you use zoning reform to address housing shortages?
Planning decisions like this are generational. You can't expect to come in with a one-year timeline and change everything. However, we have to show readiness from day one, the ability to weigh growth with actual livability. So when it comes to stepping in on October 8th for these various intensification votes on Upper James and the land use and planning philosophies, I've read the documents. I've gone through the October 8 intensification memo very carefully. I've read the report you sent, the PED 23069 report. And for those who haven't, there are some key facts from these sources. We're talking about the expansion of transit-oriented corridors from the Link to the Hydro Corridor, as Joey was saying, mixed-use and pedestrian-oriented developments. And of course, we're looking back to builds that are almost 2 years old by the time we start making changes to see if we have any success with them. Building on the November 2024 draft would be a huge thing as well. So this is going to be my first vote if elected. The principle of intensification along these transit corridors makes sense, but it only makes sense if it's sustainable. There's no such thing anymore as a business that will succeed without sustainability. And us here in the ward and us here in the City of Hamilton are a business. We need to focus on sustainability. Whether that's balancing density with traffic safety, with transit upgrades, and seeking community input along the way, we have to make sure that development serves residents first. You know, walkability to green space to the types of housing. So I'm going to ensure that this implementation includes our commitments to infrastructure, but also we need the safety and the approvals going forward from those who are living in the community. Is this what you actually want? And I'll take it back to market research again. Market research and city planning are iterative processes. You don't just make a decision and then say, well, we made the decision, let's see what happens. We will consistently review along the way to see if we are still on the right track. And that's why I mentioned before, key performance indicators are hugely important. What are our objectives and what's the data we have to see if we're on the right path? So again, when we make a decision, we then monitor the success of that decision. Just because you've made the right decision does not mean it will be successful. So I want to follow through from the data that led to the decision to the results of that decision. If we have to make change along the way, we will do so, all while being transparent.
Let's discuss development charges. Mississauga Mayor Carolyn Parrish was elected on June 10th, 2024. She formed a housing task force that first met on July 10th and issued a comprehensive report 6 months later in January 2025. The report's action plan was implemented by a unanimous vote of Mississauga City Council. It creates deep incentives for new market affordable and family housing and has time limits to ensure developers actually build. This proves municipalities can respond quickly to housing market conditions. What are your thoughts on development charges? Do you have goals for development charge reform, and how will you approach this issue if elected?
Yeah, it's a great question. As a former resident of Mississauga and a former high school vice principal there, I do understand and have seen a lot of what they've done there. You know, fantastic Mayor Hazel McCallion for years leading the way. I think with Mississauga, their plan wasn't just a plan, it was a model. When we set goals, and I teach goal setting, you know, we talk about SMART goals. They have to be specific. They have to be time-bound. And they have to assign clear responsibilities. These are basic fundamentals of project management. I mean, Mississauga had in their plan 30 actions, clear responsibilities, and clear timeline. While Hamilton is expanding, say, our transit corridors and intensifying the transit lines, we're also facing a housing affordability crisis, supply, affordability, and infrastructure. How can we make sure that Hamilton pushes for housing strategies that have the same clarity as Mississauga? No more vague promises. And that's why I said, let's get down to the data. If we are not using the data to drive our plan, and as I said, that plan being a model, then we need more partnerships, whether that's partnerships with developers, whether that's partnerships with nonprofits. That's all levels of government delivering mixed income, mixed use developments. But as I said, for me, you know, the data is going to be the most important thing to look at. But the process itself, it has to be modeled around something like Mississauga did. So what I would like to see is I would like to align our growth and strategically position ourselves to be accountable, to be well prepared, and to appeal to both pro-growth strategies, but also the affordability advocates. And I think with Mississauga's 30 clear actions and time-bound delivery deadlines, that's something that really put it tangibly. It wasn't vague. I would like to make it more tangible here with our plan and less vague.
Road safety is a significant issue in Ward 8. Upper James is by far Hamilton's most dangerous road, with nearly every section significantly more dangerous than average for both motorists and pedestrians. What's your plan to address safety on Upper James? Does your plan include unpopular but necessary changes? And if so, how do you plan to implement them?
The first thing I'm going to do, and you'll see this as part of my campaign kicking off in the next couple of weeks, is visit every small business and large institution that anchors our communities. I want to speak to the business owners. I want to speak to the consumers. I want to speak to the residents. I don't want to make decisions with assumptions. If the data doesn't exist, and I can tell you it doesn't, I will go get it. I do have the connections, whether it's talking to Sean over at Firth's, or, you know, even outside our ward, I can go down to Ale House and talk to Para. Whether it means talking to, you know, the community members at the YMCA, I have great relationships with people like Steph and Paul, who's just stepped down the vice president. I can take it to the people that it needs to be taken to, whether they're the owner of a small mom and pop fish and chip restaurant, or they're the president of our largest employer. These are the community angles that I bring to the table. And if I don't have the relationship, you can bet I'm going to go seek it out. So my answers are going to come from the people. And I'm not going to, you know, discourage anyone from raising their voice. Everyone will be heard. Everyone is invited to speak. And once we amalgamate all of those feelings, all of those thoughts, I think we'll have the right pathway, the right data to help drive better decision making.
What's your overall plan to address road safety?
I can tell you right now, we need more police enforcement of traffic violations that involve movement violations. So we have to focus less on things that are to, you know, meet quotas that don't directly input on safety. So while it might be nice to give someone a ticket for an expired license plate, I'd prefer we stop the speeders that are going from Upper Paradise to Garth to, you know, you name the major transit. We're starting to do things like on Upper Ottawa, we're installing speed cameras. There's a need for more cameras in general, whether that's cameras for safety or whether that's cameras for road safety. You know, and we have a limit to what we can do in terms of providing those cameras or whatever the equipment or those needs are. So again, to me, my first answer is to find out what exactly people want to feel safe. And that's a large demographic, you know, for seniors to students to young families, we may have different needs. But in the end, those needs all fall under the same things. We need to get around, right? We need to get from point A to point B. And along the way, we want to stop at the businesses that anchor our community that I spoke of before. So I want to make sure I understand people's pathway. What is your point A to point B? Where do you stop along the way? Where do you not stop along the way? Where can you not stop along the way because it's not accessible? So immediately, I would like to crack down on speeding. I would like to make sure we have more enforcement on the road so both pedestrians and motorists feel safer. We also have a large issue with the actual condition of the roads. I've seen some recent work on my street itself where it was redone and it's actually in a worse condition for drivability than it was before the work. Driving through the pothole did less damage to my rims than driving over the bumps that are now on the road there. So again, where's the accountability for the money that's being spent? Obviously, we decided the money had to be spent. There was a reason for it. I'd like to go back to the reason. What's the data that led to us making that decision? And like I said, just because we made the right decision, that doesn't mean we did it successfully. So I'd like to dive into road safety. I'd like to dive into pedestrian safety. I'd like to dive into motorist safety, but I'd like to do it with the input of all of those stakeholders.
Hamilton City Council meetings. Attendance, respect, and focus are all issues. I want to ask you about one specific issue. Councillors leaving, not attending, or not focusing attention on public delegations. What expectation will you set for yourself when it comes to listening to delegations?
What I do in my roles as a leader in academia, in sports, in business, is listen. And I can't listen if I don't show up. One of the things I used to do back in the day was be a hockey scout. It's very difficult to be a good scout if you're not at the games. So part of what I really, really believed set me apart from my competition was showing up. Showing up is what I tell my students is also the first and most important step. Everything will come from there. So you can bet with my need and want to collect the data, I have to show up to be able to do it. I'm going to be there. My weekly schedule, I only teach a couple of times a week. You know, it's pretty light here and there. The rest is filled with attending meetings, meetings that are important to me, meetings on my weekends, meetings on my days off, meetings on wherever I have to meet someone who is important to meet with. I'll bring this to City Council and I'll be there for every need that our ward residents have. Anything that needs to be spoken about, I will be there to speak about. Anything that there is to listen to, I will listen to in person or remotely if it happens to be a digital conference. I'll be there. You know, councillors govern collectively, not as individuals as well. So part of what I'm doing is speaking to other councillors, former councillors. I've had some great conversations with Scott Duvall, for example, learning down to the numbers about things that have worked and not worked previously. I'm not afraid either. I have a great background in public speaking. I have a very strategic mindset and I come extremely prepared. So when I do enter these circumstances, these discussions, and you said it before, you know, everyone said the same thing about transparency. They're going to do this and do that. I'll only tell you if I can do it based on what the data says, what the conversation is. And if we can do it, I'll suggest the best way to, because I'll have been there and have done it, you know, have the foot on the ground, the ear to the ground to know what we have to do.
Ontario's Municipal Act was amended to make mayors more powerful and more accountable as the head of council. How do you believe strong mayor powers have changed the role of councillors? And how do you see yourself effectively achieving your platform in cooperation with the mayor and 14 other councillors?
Absolutely. And I said this in the previous answer. We don't govern individually. We govern collectively. So one of the things that I've seen in precedent set by other decisions made previously with other council members and other wards are up to the mayor's level. How does a decision in one place affect us elsewhere? So if it's something outside of Ward 8, I want to know exactly how it will affect Ward 8, not just what the reason we're making a budget spend or deciding to take action on a certain issue. I would like to know in the big picture what that means for my residents. If it means they're spending money, if it's coming out of their taxes, if it's coming out of our budget, these are things we have to be clear and transparent about. And you said it before, you have to show up. I can't be transparent about issues that I'm not present on and I'm not discussing actively. So the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to engage other counselors. I am going to engage the mayor's office. I'm going to engage any stakeholder at any level necessary to make sure we have all the information we need. We have all the viewpoints that we need from all of the stakeholders that matter, and that we ultimately lead to the decision that best reflects their interests and their needs.
What are two changes you will propose to improve city services?
City services right now, we've talked about them a little bit. I think accessibility is a big thing, and we do have some new accessibility laws coming to the city. So we do have a deadline for improving accessible access to restaurants and other locations. I think this is something we need to continue looking at. And again, I said it earlier for various reasons. Not only is the right thing to do, it's the right thing to do from the business perspective, the business of the city and all the small businesses within our ward and the city itself. If someone does not feel comfortable or cannot access your business, your product, your service, they won't. And that means less revenue coming through. That means less money being spent within our community. So when it comes to the community level Ward 8, I told you, I'm going to go to every single business. I'm going to go to every anchoring institution, and I'm going to find out exactly what hallway, what nook, what cranny that problem exists in, why it exists, and how we can or cannot deal with it. With accessibility, it ties into transit as well. So I want to make sure people have the routes they need to get where they need to go, but it's not that simple. Those routes can be blocked. We have bylaw that enforces things like the removal of snow, whatever it is that can be a barrier to accessibility and a barrier to transit. So I see transit and accessibility as 1-2-2-1-A, 1-A, 1-B, however you want to put it. They go hand in hand. If we're building, say, a computer lab at the convention center in downtown Hamilton, the Carmen's Convention Center, and it has 12 PCs, how many of those need to be sit-stand desks to be accessible? Do we have a ramp or an elevator leading from the street right to the place where we are going to engage? And that's just one example. We have lots of amazing facilities within our ward and within our city, from recreation facilities, athletic facilities, digital facilities, such as the makerspace here at the beautiful Terry Berry Library. We have a beautiful makerspace over at Mohawk College. Do people know these spaces exist? If not, they're not going to be able to access them. And if they do know they exist, they have to be able to get to the place and operate within it successfully. So when I say accessibility, I'm also talking about transit. And when I say transit, I'm also talking about accessibility.
What are two changes you will propose to improve quality of life in Hamilton?
I think those two right off the bat are the two biggest quality of life improvements that I could see for myself, being someone that spends the majority of their time in Ward 8, living, working, breathing, eating. If I can see myself getting around better, I see the quality of my life being better. The places I'm going will also see an improvement to the quality of their life, whether that's more money in the pockets of the business owners, or whether that's just a more vibrant lifestyle. You know, the park is filled with people, the skating rinks have people. Wherever it is, we have to see quality of life improve based on being able to get there. And I'll take that to a higher level, space and programming. It's the two biggest challenges we often have when we're talking about academics. We're going to launch a new program. Okay, where are we going to put it? And if you have a space, you have the opposite problem. We have the space. What kind of program do we put in it? So for me, quality of life improvements, aside from accessibility and transport, they rely on the spaces and the programs that we have. And my expertise is in developing new programs and new products. I've developed 3 programs at the graduate and undergraduate level. I've led various programs at, you know, whether it's government, private organizations, sport, academics, in the public or private sectors, I've led these projects. So I would love to see this mindset really focus in on Ward 8, that we can really, really narrow down what we want to do to show fiscal responsibility with tangible improvements. And those tangible improvements will in themselves be quality of life improvements, both for the residents, the business owners, and everyone and anyone in between.
It's August 2026. I'm writing a review of the 4-year council term that is just ending. What 3 words do you hope I'll use to describe your 10 months as a city councilor?
I'm a big wrestling fan, and there used to be a thing called eFeds online in the 90s, 2000s. They were very popular. You created a fictional wrestler that you then represented by writing and telling stories as if you were them. And my wrestler had a motto. It was improvise, adapt, and overcome. Whatever challenges we face, you know, we have to be aware of where they came from. They also have to be something that we can act on, right? So from data to information to decision-making, I want to improvise when necessary, adapt when our plans change, and overcome in the end, you know? And we talk about that in business. It's called agility. And I'm going to bring the concept and the methodology of agility to Ward 8. Agility means that you can expect change will happen, and when it happens, you better have a plan for it. So we will be ready for change. We'll be ready to improvise and adapt. And of course, when we do that, we'll be able to overcome the problems that we face, whether we know of them now or whether they arise in the future.
What experience has most motivated you to seek a seat on Hamilton City Council?
I work every day at Mohawk College. I have lived in the ward, spent money in the ward. I've said this many times. I understand, as someone who's here, what works and doesn't work for me and what works and doesn't work for those around me. I would love to be able to take those voices and my actions to a more powerful position for the ward. What motivates me is myself. I'm self-motivated. Being here and doing what I do is what motivates me. I'm very passionate about my community. Every Saturday, I give up 2 hours of my time. I volunteer it to teach esports to youth under 17. On my vacation, I'm actively working with community members outside of my job. That's self-motivation. It's not extrinsic motivation. I know a lot of people see the counselor role and say, wow, extrinsically, externally, that's a good money position. That's a high profile position. You know, there's some clout, for lack of a better word, in having that position. I don't need that. I have my platform already. I have my position in the community cemented already. But I could use more power, more authority to take it to the next level, both for me and for everyone that I can benefit.
Thank you. That's the end of the questions. Do you have any closing remarks you'd like to share?
I'd just like to say that I thank you for your time in this platform, Joey. I think your unbiased and open media coverage is going to provide the voters with the information they need to make the right decision. And if they'd like to seek out more information about me, you'll see me traveling around local businesses and posting to social media and doing all my campaign stuff. You can find more at federko.com, F-E-D-U-R-K-O.com. All my information is there. But you know what? Reach out to me. If you want to ask me a question or you want to find out more, I'm always available. If you ask my students, if you check Rate My Professors and you see the 80 out of 80 5-star reviews, actually, I think I got 1 4-star. But that being said, the reason I'm effective is that I'm available. And if I'm not available, I cannot be effective. So starting now, starting last week, I am available to you here in Ward 8, you in the city of Hamilton, and you yourself, Joey.
Thank you for joining us.